And it's quite a funny video, like the actual official, I think, Falkirk TV video potentially, or maybe it's even an official video, I'm not sure. And like, it's kind of like going about and it doesn't know who to follow. And it just follows me like running on my own towards the Falkirk fans and just diving full life with just nobody else followed me. Everyone else went away over with Ali Graham, but the video managed to follow me running away over to the fans. But it was quite a nice video, but I was just the sheer joy. I still remember that unbelievable joy of getting, oh my God, we've still got a chance here. It's going to penalties and we've still got a chance.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I'm your host, Dean Stephen. And for today's episode, we meet a modern-day Busby Babe who swapped the cultures of St Johnston to St Olaf and from Queen of the South to King of the North. Today, we look to extinguish the rumour that he moved to Norway because that is where the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded and he's always had a passion for sandwich competitions. It's David Weverson. David, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
So let's start at the beginning, shall we? Where were you born and where were you brought up in your footballing career?
Born in Paisley, brought up in the south side of Glasgow in Clarkston. Started playing football from obviously a really young age at Giffnock North Soccer Centre. My dad was one of the ones that sort of started Giffnock North Soccer Centre in the early 90s. So, yeah, just started at Giffnock North.
Did they always pick you?
It wasn't a team. It was more just a training type of thing. But so my dad, along with a few others, a few famous names, you probably, Tony Docherty was one, Tommy Wilson was another part of it. Also Lindsay Easton, who's Brian Easton's dad, he was part of it as well. So there's a few names that have remained in football since then. But yeah, I was there until I was about nine, and then Busby Boys Club was my last boys club step before I moved to Queen Park.
Busby are quite prominent. I think Aidan McGeady came through there as well. Are they one of the...
Busby, Craig Bryson was the one that was at Busby for a bit longer, out of the ones that kind of had a good career, better career than me, shall we say.
You don't really associate that part of Glasgow with, I mean, like in the 50s and 60s, all the kids came out of like Germoyne and Govan, and it was a hard life trying to escape poverty effectively. You don't really kind of associate that part of Glasgow with such a fight, but I suppose it's you've got parents who are supportive and can take kids to training, and it doesn't matter who you are or where you are. If you love football, you love football.
Yeah, I think so. I think even for me as well, like I didn't play with a lot of people when I started to go through the age groups from like Clarkston or from the south side of Glasgow. There's not a huge amount of players that have come out from like Clarkston in that area, considering how many people live there. But yeah, parents that were supportive, I was always playing football, and yeah, they were happy to take me anywhere, however many times a week it was. And yeah, just I was lucky in that sense. Obviously a slightly different upbringing to people who are desperate to get to football to escape something. I was much more just doing it as a hobby, and I happen to be quite good at it.
So did you have another potential career path mapped out at the same time?
Not really. Like I never really thought about it. I was just kind of grown up, and just the football. I used to do all of the sports. You know, I was decent at running, played golf, played tennis. Happened that when I got to kind of 14, 15, the football was the one that became the most important. I never really saw myself as becoming a professional footballer. Like it wasn't really something that I absolutely was desperate to do, but I was good enough, and the older I got, the more I realized that I had an opportunity to take that step and at least give it a go, and hopefully try and become as good as I could be. Like I think that's where I differ from a lot of people. I think a lot of people have such an inner drive to become a footballer. For me, it was more just, I just loved it, loved playing it, loved the social side of it, and just, yeah, I just really enjoyed it. And that's why I became a player eventually. And yeah, I guess I was lucky that I had some natural talent.
Look, it wasn't a kind of conventional route into senior football for you. It was more a kind of gentlemanly sportsman kind of route. Queen's Park at the time, you attracted their interest. They're now professional, but in your day, they were an amateur club. So first of all, how did you come to the attention of Queen's Park? And secondly, how does it differ in the amateur setup with Queen's Park than it did when you were a professional?
I was there from when I was 11 years old. I did a trial and I got through some trials and joined as an under 12 basically. So I was there for the whole youth system all the way through. And I think even before they were professional, the youth system was absolutely fantastic. And I think actually probably better than it is now. I think they've kind of taken a little bit, if I'm rightly, I think they've taken a little bit of a step away from the whole promoting the youth all the way through. Obviously they've turned professional. It's a completely different way of thinking. we were essentially brought up to be in the first team. That's the whole point of the youth system before. Like, they didn't have any money, they did have money obviously as a club, but they didn't pay players any money. So to get players to go there, they had to make their own. I was part of a really good youth team. Successful in terms of we won League Cups twice when I was under 19. We had some good coaches, and the whole plan was always, right, who out of this team can we get into that first team? And actually didn't work out too well in the end, because it was pretty much only me out of the original age group. It was just when I went up to the under 19s, I started, and it's a double age group. That's when I was playing with players who also played with me in the first team. And that was that second year as an under 19, there was about three or four, or maybe even five, that eventually went up to the first team. And that's exactly what they aim for. And Queen's Park at that time got quite lucky with an extremely talented group of young players, which resulted in a pretty good first team at the time, which was pretty well known in Scottish football history as one of the better Queen's Park teams. The one that got promoted in 07. Yeah.
That's right. Well, the kind of manager for a long spell of that time was Billy Stark. He always came across as a very serious and somber man whenever I spoke to him. Is that fair, do you think?
Very analytical, I think. He thought a lot about the game. He wasn't a big, massive personality, as a lot of managers in that era were, and the previous managers had been as well. So I think he was exactly what we needed at the time. You know, we respected him because of the career he'd had. And also, we just liked him because he was a genuinely nice person, off the pitch, cared about the players, cared about what their future would look like in terms of football. It was just perfect for me. Like, I didn't respond well to managers who shouted at me and got on my back. So when you get a manager who puts his arm around you and tells you things you can be brilliant for him, is something that I really responded well to, and probably played my best football under him when I was only 19 years old.
Would you like a Billy Stark stat?
Yes.
Billy is the top goal scoring midfielder in the Scottish top flight.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously a very talented footballer, and I think we all kind of respected that he'd come from playing a lot of games for Celtic, and yeah, the whole team really took to him. I think it was a really good bond between the team and the manager.
So when I started my incredibly short football career aged 7, which ended aged 11 or whatever, I had to run out on the Red Blaze gravel of Scottish football pitches, but he didn't quite have it quite as tough for your first senior club. Was it an advantage for you playing somewhere like Hampden?
Yeah, I think so. Especially for me, I was super quick. The open grass of Hampden was absolutely perfect for me. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge, huge bonus training at Lesser Hampden and playing at Hampden. Like, it was probably the biggest draw. I mean, it was the only draw, really. Let's be honest, we weren't getting paid. So it was literally the only draw for players, and it makes a huge difference. It really does. Like, I think you get to start training at Lesser Hampden when you're like 16. Well, that's what it used to be, because it used to be grass. We used to go to Cathkin a lot, Tory Glen and stuff. So when you're younger, you don't get the same facilities. But yeah, when you're, I think nowadays it's the Astral, so they can train on it all the time. But yeah, the carrot of getting to play at Lesser Hampden was always a thing when you were kind of coming up through the ages. Like, you get to play at Lesser, and then obviously the first team gets to play at Hampden, and it's something that doesn't get boring. I don't think it just doesn't get boring just sitting in that changing room and knowing you're going out, even if there's not that many fans. It doesn't really matter. Like, it's the stadium, it's the grass and just the changing rooms and everything inside Hampden. It's just so much history and so much just really enjoyable. And I think it gets a bad press, Hampden, but it's always got a soft spot in my heart anyway, given how much it meant to me.
I have to wholeheartedly agree with you, although the only downside for a journalist when you attended a Queen's Park game, the stadium was so massive you easily get lost if you went to the toilet, and I find myself wandering. There's like lecture theatres in Hampden, and you're just I'm like crying, somebody help me, I need to get back. So you made it into the team of the year when you're playing for Queen's Park as well. I think that was a third division team of the year.
Yeah.
Did you get any nice mementos or any wee award ceremonies to commemorate it?
This was a player of the year, so I was nominated for player of the year. I think there's five of us that were nominated. So there was the player of the year do, and they do the, I think, I remember if they show like a wee highlight package of each player, maybe not, but they do, like, they put up the team of the year, and they'll put up the five players who are nominated for the team of the year, player of the year. So that's what all I remember. But I didn't win it, unfortunately. But don't think I got anything for it. I don't think I got anything, but just the recognition was good enough.
Well, it's your fellow professionals that would have voted for that, wouldn't it? It would have been your fellow.
Right, that's what makes it so nice. Like, at the same time, like, I've been in the change rooms when these votes are happening, and a lot of them are just like, was that guy that plays for the Berwick? What's his name that scored all the goals? Right, let's just go for him, and then everybody just votes for him. So it's kind of, I'm not stupid enough to know that, like, everybody's sitting like, oh, well, this dude was brilliant. I think it's a lot of those, like, who's that wee fast guy that plays up front for Queen's Park? Scored a few goals. Aye, him. Let's just put him. And then the whole dressing room's just like, aye, him. Right, okay.
If it was me, I would have been slipping people a tenner and stuff. Remember me at the players, you're big man, I want voted in.
Yeah.
So the time came eventually for you to make your first move in football, and it was your first move into the kind of professional ranks. Did you have a civilian career at that time as well that you were doubling up with your football?
I was a student. I did 3 years as a student at Strathclyde while I was playing for Queen's Park. At that point, I had the decision whether I wanted to go and continue and do a master's or play football potentially.
What were you studying?
It's a degree that sounds a lot worse than it was. It was called Sport and Physical Activity, and it makes it sound like it's like PE, but it was at Strathclyde Uni, and I was at Jordan Hill campus. I really enjoyed it. But after 3 years, with the opportunity to go pro, and yeah, I felt like that was too good to turn down. And I felt like we got promoted in Queen's Park, and I felt like the time was right to take the next step.
So how did that transfer came about?
I didn't have an agent. I didn't think I needed an agent. So it was just the case. I just went in and spoke to Billy Stark, and he just told me that it was a few teams that had contacted him, and if it was okay with me, you could pass on my number and I could just kind of deal with that myself. And that was how it happened. And I just got a few calls from a few different managers and met up with a few and made my decision just based on that, basically.
And St. Johnstone was the decision. Derek McInnes was just starting his managerial career that season as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, so he was a bit later. He was still playing when I went. It was Owen Coyle that was a manager. And Owen Coyle was there until about October time. And then he left to go to Burnley. And that's when Derek took over the managership.
Did you think at that point he was going to go on to quite a successful managerial career? Did you see traits at that point develop?
He didn't like me, which was an issue, not personally, just as a player, which is an issue. I did. I saw it straight away. Him and Tony Dock. So I reunited with Tony Dock, obviously, who had known all those years ago. He was assistant for Dell. So Tony Dock and Derek were a really good team together. Training was really good. Huge difference from Owen. Much more technical training. Much more video analysis, much more just like concentrating on how the team plays and set up and formations and stuff, just much more, just a totally different style of manager to Owen, who was much more in terms of just like keeping spirits up and everybody, like he was very, very positive. It was just a lot of games, a lot of shooting, a lot of crossing and finishing. He was much more just about keeping a nice atmosphere, but Derek was much more, I'd say, professional and definitely I could see straight away that, I thought he was going to have a good career. And so it's proved, still proving right now.
Did it come as a culture shock for you to move from the atmosphere at Queen's Park into what is a serious side that wanted to challenge for to get into the Premier League? I think they lost out this season before or the season before that to Gretna.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and a lot of very experienced professionals that don't countenance any snotty-nosed youngsters coming in with designs of taking their spot in the squad.
No, absolutely. I noticed it straight away. It was difficult. Huge step up in terms of quality, just every single day at training. Obviously, I hadn't trained every day as well. That was a big change to my body and to just how I felt. It was tough. There's a lot of seasoned pros, like guys like Martin Hardy, Kevin James, Paul Sheeran, guys who played at the top level, guys who demanded standards every single day at training. So it was a huge, huge, shock is the right word for me. I was, not that I wasn't ready for it, like I was extremely confident in myself when I went there. I thought that I would just play games for them and then play every week and score goals and stuff, but it didn't work out and I ended up playing. I played striker all my life and then I ended up playing right midfield or left midfield and getting a bit lost myself. And by the end of that season, I was really struggling to get a game, but just struggling to believe that I was kind of good enough as well. It was really, really tough, actually, that first year.
And it was effectively a move to Queen of the South that was facilitated because of that. How did the approach from Palmerston take place?
I just got called into the office one day by Derek, and he just said, look, Queen of the South have made an offer. He said, I don't want you to leave. I'd prefer you to stay. But I understand if you want to go. That was pretty much it. And I said, well, not had any game time. It was I think it was about August time. And I hadn't had any game time at the start of the new season. And I felt like I'd done really well in pre-season. I'd trained really hard and felt like I'd impressed in the games I'd played, but he just obviously didn't fancy me. And at that point, I was just like, it was a lot of travel. I was still living in Glasgow. I was traveling to Perth every day. Wasn't playing any games. Just, it was really difficult to motivate myself for that. And yeah, the chance to go to Queen of the South. So Kenny Branigan was the assistant there. He was my first manager. He was the manager who gave me my debut at Queen's Park. And he was very keen to get me down, and I knew he liked me. And Queen of the South trained in Glasgow, at Glasgow Green. And so, yeah, it was just kind of all added up. They'd just been in the Scottish Cup final, and they'd just played in Europe. And yeah, I thought it was a really good opportunity for me to play more games and hopefully, yeah, hopefully get back to where I wanted to be in terms of my plan for the future, because it was if I felt like it had really stalled that year at St Johnstone.
And you moved the season after Queen of the South lost in the cup final. So hopes must have been high. You'd players like Stephen Dobie was around. He was a class player in that division. And Stevie Tosh, who just seemed like bottled chaos, and he still seems like bottled chaos. He does the Aberdeen cold commentary stuff. He's a character.
Yeah. He's so Stevie Tosh was a really good footballer and demanded extremely high standards every day. Just that team that got to the final of that cup was a good team. Like Steve Tosh was there, so as you say, Dobie, Jimmy McQuilkin, Neil McFarlane, not an Aberdeen favourite, I believe. Sean O'Connor, but yeah, it was Robert Harris, who went on to have a really good career and down in England. Just a really strong team that I was going to, and a big squad as well, really big squad. So I remember the first day I was there, we were doing like a huge circle just for in the warm up, and I was like, about 25 people here. This squad is huge. Maybe this isn't the best idea, but it was a really enjoyable 3 years I had there at Queen of the South. I had a really great time, loved the club. We did pretty well. I think we finished top four. I think we finished fourth 3 years in a row, maybe fifth one of the years. But yeah, pretty solid seasons for Queen of the South, and had some good seasons myself. I played some really good football for at least 2.5 of the 3 years, and not got a lot of negative things to say about Queen of the South.
Well, you then moved on to what you say is your favourite season in football, with Falkirk. Was it just a case of your contract expiring at Queen's and you having to find somewhere else, or did Falkirk with you?
Yeah, it was a tough summer. I was offered a new contract by the chairman. Because the manager, so Kenny Branigan was the manager at that point, because Gordon Chisholm had gone off to Dundee, rather controversially. And Kenny hadn't been given a new contract. So, as is pretty common in Scottish football, a lot of contracts just wind down. Nothing's really done about it until the end of the season. It's just the way it is in Scottish football. I went away on my summer holiday. The chairman has phoned me, offered me a contract, said he really wants to keep me here. And I said, yeah, absolutely, I want to stay. He'd offered me just the same terms again. And I was really keen to stay. Got back, then there was a new manager, and it was Gus McPherson. He phoned me and said that the contract's off the table and I'd need to come in and impress, essentially, in pre-season. So... yeah, that was tough. Kind of had a week or so before I had to go back in, and I was kind of wondering if I should, because I phoned my mate, who was Stephen McKenna. Stephen McKenna was one of my best mates at Queen of the South, and he was in the same boat in terms of being offered a contract by the chairman, come back his holiday. And I said, what's Gus said to you? And he says, he's told me to come down tomorrow and sign the contract. And I was like, oh. I was like, oh no, that's not a good sign if he's been offered one and he's kept his word and he's told me that he wants to come and see me. That is not a good sign. I went to training. I ended up training for about 4 weeks, and I was in the best shape of my life. We played friendlies, I was playing brilliant. And Gus just called me over after training one day and said, sorry, I've not got anything for you. And that was it. That was my time off at Queen of the South.
So you had to scramble to get another club at Notus?
So I was quite, I was absolutely gutted. I remember crying at training, just with like saying bye to all my friends who had been there for 3 years with. And Robert Harris just said, look, I know a guy who's looking to become an agent. Do you want me to put you in touch with him? And it was a guy called, his name's Paul. What's his second name? Pause this while I remember his name.
Just Paul the agent. That's what would be in your phone. You'll just Paul be the Paul agent. The agent.
Yeah. And then we second him. Never mind. Anyway, and I spoke to him, and he was very keen to help. He was just kind of getting his feet in the door, and I was like, well, by this time it was late in July, and it was getting towards time that I need to make a decision. Like, otherwise, I'll miss the start of the season. And he was like, right, just give me a couple of weeks and we'll find something. And I remember, like, it was absolutely glorious. The summer was absolutely glorious. And I was just lying in my garden in the sunshine or playing golf or just like what if I was really like worried about it. And he eventually phoned me after a couple of weeks again and just said, look, Stephen Presley wants you to come in and train for Falkirk for a week just to see you. I think he's interested. They're looking for one more player, your type of player, and go in on Friday and train. And so yeah, I went in, and I think the day after, or maybe 2 days after, I made my debut. I was on my way. That was the start of a new, really, really good year at Falkirk that I'm absolutely loved.
Presley seems like he's one of those characters, maybe a bit like Stark, somebody who's a very good kind of motivator, a very kind of critical thinker as well. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. And a very personal man. Like, he'll talk one-on-one to players. He's very easy to talk to in that sense, and I think he's one of the ones that a lot of people don't like outside the group. If you're in the group, he's just very likable, and I think obviously another one, respect the career he's had, but just as well, like, respect how hard he's working. You can see, like, he's putting in the hours every day. He's there before everyone. He's leaving after everyone. He's looking, he's watching videos. He's always trying to improve things. And I think that's something that, I certainly appreciated anyway. Just think it was a nice change from, it was a change from Queen of the South, because Kenny Brannigan wasn't like that. Like, I liked Kenny for different reasons, but he was much more of a kind of old school guts and glory manager, which didn't suit me that much, but at the same time it kind of worked with Kenny, just because I think he had a kind of love-hate relationship with me. But with Stephen Presley, it was much more a case of, yeah, hand around the shoulder and I believe in you kind of thing. And that's, as I said before, that's always worked with me, and it really, really worked with me at Falkirk.
And Falkirk were going through a kind of youth revolution themselves at this point, that they were a club that had fallen out of the Premier League.
Yeah.
Discarded some of the players from that era that were maybe,
yeah,
with higher wages, and they looked
huge wages.
Yeah, so you've got players like Alston, Sybil, Fulton, and Kingsley that broke through.
Yeah,
they're still playing, and they're still playing at a very high, very high level.
A completely different culture. The change in Queen of the South and Falkirk. When I went there, it was just like, geez, there's so many kids, like teenagers, all of them, almost. That team was just full of them. It was. I was one of the old. I went. I remember one, like, we used to play like old v young or old v middle v young, three teams. And at Queen of the South, I would be in the young team. I went to Falkirk and I was in the old team. I was 24, I think, maybe 25, just turned 25. It was like just full of kids. It was big Darren Dodds, Michael McGovern, the goalie, and me. We're pretty much three of the oldest guys in the squad, which was, it was a huge change in culture, but it was really nice. I really liked it. I liked training with the young guys. They were super keen to learn, really hardworking, and yeah, super talented, as is shown by the level that they've played at for so many years.
Do you think that maybe Presley saw something in you in those kind of fleeting couple of days in your trial that said, this is a player that's going to be a really good mentor for these kids coming through? And that maybe helped with some of the decision making?
I'm not sure if it's so much that. I think what he saw in me was extremely hard worker, willing to learn, willing to listen, wanting to take information on board. I wasn't a super skillful player. I wasn't great technically, but I was intelligent. I was tact intelligent. And I think that's what he saw in me, that tactical intelligence, just that maybe they were just lacking with some of the younger players. Because I think a lot of his team is based on shape and keeping your shape and doing things correct in the structure. And I think that's something that he probably saw in me more than being a mentor, but also as well, just like complete, I'm just like completely no trouble in the change room. Like I'm just really calm
who was trouble in the change room? Who are you comparing yourself to?
No, actually nobody at Falkirk. But just, you know, you get characters who are very loud and opinionated. At Falkirk, they didn't exist, because I think the way that Presley wanted it is because if I'm right in saying he was part of the relegation team as a manager, and so he saw what the culture was like before. It was full of guys who were on a lot of money, that obviously shouldn't have got relegated, and probably the step away from that was much more against the case of guys who went in it so much for the money and were more in it just for the to do the best they could and listen. I think what he needed was people who were willing to listen to him and willing to take on board all of his instructions, and that was something that I was more than happy to do. I was a really good at taking on instructions from managers.
Well, you should never correct or contradict your guest, David, but I'm going to have to pull you up, because in fact you were technically gifted and you were skillful. Let's watch your time, so I think you're being far too humble there. You also had a very, you mentioned Darren Dodds, who was built at the side of a house, and he looked like somebody
Robocop.
It's like somebody went into artificial intelligence and said, design me a picture of what a Scottish football captain is.
Yeah.
And they brought him out. But you also had one of the most enigmatic signings, I think, in that championship history, in Farid El Agoui, who came from nowhere and then just could not stop scoring.
Yeah. Just a brilliant guy. Just so likable. I think he scored 27 goals that year or something in the league. It was a really good footballer, cracking finisher. He used to practice at training every single day after training, just smashing in volleys. Like, you know, Tam Scobie used to just fire crosses in for him after training, 20, 30, 40, just hammering in volleys, and he would hardly ever miss. He was so good at finishing. Unbelievable in the air, strong, just more important than that, just fantastic in the dressing room, just such a nice guy to be around, super humble, super calm, and yeah, just a fit in perfectly in that team. It was exactly what we needed, somebody who didn't need too much in terms of service, because we didn't play super attacking football. We were quite well organized, technically good, but we didn't commit a lot of numbers forward. So somebody who could put the ball in the net whenever they got a chance was exactly what we needed. And I was lucky with him and the year after with Lyle Taylor, but yes, with Philippe especially, just a fantastic, it was a fantastic guy. Just such a shame that it didn't quite work out for him after. They had to get a really bad injury down in Brentford. And yeah, he was just a cracking guy to be around, and really helped a lot of the young players.
Yeah, Falkirk had a really good kind of succession of strikers, because Lyle Taylor was brilliant, whatever I saw.
Yeah, Lyle was absolutely outstanding.
And you say that he's a really nice guy. You're going to have to explain this to me. How did he get 13 yellow cards that year and you didn't get any?
Oh, I don't get yellow cards. Did I not get any? Not even for diving. That's a surprise.
Had you just taught him swear words and then that's all he ever said?
It was probably his elbows that were causing the yellow cards. He was going up for just big challenges, and he would maybe just catch defenders with elbows, and that would be why. I don't know how many bookings I had in my career, but I think it's definitely in single figures. It's one booking for a tackle in my career, which is slightly embarrassing, but at the same time, I wasn't a foully player. I got booked for diving several times and booked for the kicking the ball away a few times, but
Was this a team that were expected to challenge for promotion, or was this a consolidation season, do you think?
It's a tough one, because like thinking back, we were in the running that year. I think the fans expected us to challenge, and the players themselves, we thought we could. We thought we were good enough. But budget-wise, we were nowhere near the budget of Ross County. I think it was Ross County that won the league that year. Was it Dundee?
Ross County,
yeah. Yeah, so we were nowhere near budget in terms of what Ross County were getting, paying their players. And I think we were on a really good run, and we were right up with Ross County. And then if I remember rightly, it was a really bad winter, and we had a lot of games called off. And then after that, we just couldn't quite keep up the pace after the winter. I think the fans will probably say that we should be challenging more for the league. I think in the end we finished third, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And unfortunately, in those days, I mean, I think I finished second, third, fourth, and maybe fifth. But five times out of those 6 years that I was in those top league in the second division, I finished in the playoff positions. But there was no playoffs until I left Falkirk. So it was a shame. You had to finish first. It was first or bust. So I think a lot of the disappointment comes in the lack of promotion. But I think if there had been playoffs at those times, I think a lot of people would have said that's quite a successful season. Finishing third, getting to the semi-final League Cup, winning the Challenge Cup play. I think if we did that and there was playoffs, people would be saying that, like, well, Falkirk have been absolutely brilliant this season, like really pushing the leaders, getting into the playoffs, this cup run, cup win. But I think when people looked at it, they just thought, well, Falkirk haven't got promoted again, and maybe some saw that as a bit of a failure. But I think that's probably a little bit unfair given the squad and the budget that Ross County had over us.
Well, your first goal for Falkirk was against a former European Cup semi-finalist in Dundee.
Yes.
Is it a relief to get your first goal for a club when you're a striker?
I mean, at this point, I was never playing striker. I was playing right midfield, pretty consistently right midfield. I played some games left midfield, but yeah, I would never play striker. So, I mean, it was a massive relief. I remember it. It was kind of an awkward finish. I kind of slid on my left and hit it with my left foot, and it went up into the roof of the net. Rab kind of palmed it up. Rab Douglas kind of palmed it up into the roof of the net. But I remember it well. It was a nice feeling. It was in front of the Falkirk fans at that end. And obviously it was a big game against Dundee, because I think Dundee finished second that year. No, in fact, you know, Dundee had a huge points deduction that year, wasn't it?
I think it might have been, yeah.
And that, so they had a really good team, but they were miles behind in points. But it was a really nice goal we scored, and to get your first, do you have the date for it? Was it September, or was it later than that?
I did have it somewhere. Have it.
I think it wasn't too late on. I think it was maybe in like game five or something, or game six. So it wasn't too late. It didn't take me too long, but yeah, it was a really nice feeling.
That season got off to a cracking start, and this is when Challenge Cup was kind of mixed in with the League Cup as well for teams in those divisions, which made things incredibly confusing. But the Challenge Cup for Falkirk that season started off with a win against Brechin, followed up with, this was a win against Dundee. It's kind of effectively still pre-season at this point. The clubs are still trying to fill up their squads. I don't want to say that the Challenge Cup isn't taken seriously. That's not fair. But in the earlier rounds, I don't think it's priorities for clubs.
I think that's still the same, to be honest. I think the priority is the league. We get to the quarterfinal, it's like a bonus, and then from there you're like, you take it seriously. I think it's probably still the same. It's like, obviously you want to win games, but it's more about back then, especially when it was early on, it was more about just like getting the fitness. I think back then as well, like when you played lower league teams, it didn't feel as difficult as it is now. I think it always kind of felt like we were a good step ahead of the lower league teams. Like, felt like we were in big trouble against them. So I think maybe even it was a bit easier to get through the earlier rounds back then, but I think now it's a little bit harder. I think part-time players are much more professional in how they look after themselves. So it's maybe a bit harder now.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think it's a kind of consolidation of coaching as well, that everybody's got a kind of central thesis that they follow, and people are so well drilled.
Yeah.
I don't want to be rude to the teams that you played against, but when you're playing against Brechin, East Fife and Annan, in those days it wasn't the toughest kind of side of the draw to get through, but beating Dundee, that was a huge, huge game. Possibly the biggest game that that actual competition could have offered. But you got through to the final, but there was a disparity because the first four kind of qualification rounds are between July and October, then you have to wait all the way till April to play the final, which is a bit unfair.
It's a strange one. Yeah, and we lost probably our best player, one of our really important players in the team, which was Callum Higginbotham. He played the number 10 role behind Farid, basically linked everything from midfield to attack, and he went to Huddersfield in the winter. And also Murray Wallace signed for Huddersfield, but we were lucky to get him back on loan for the rest of the season. So yeah, we were a bit short-handed when it came to the final. It was a little bit strange. And also I think we were in quite poor form when we got to the final in the league. We'd kind of dropped away a little bit. It's a completely different time of year. The team is playing in a different way. It's a strange one. Like, why we did that. I remember, I think it's when I was at Queen of the South, but the final was supposed to be in October, and it was the weather was so bad it got postponed and then postponed again. And that was when they were like, right, we'll just do it in spring because it's nicer. And I think that's when it happened, when we started doing that. For whatever reason, but yeah, it is a little bit strange.
So you're drawn against Accies in the final. Had you started to notice more buzz around the club at that point? Were the fans quite interested in the prospect of winning this trophy?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's such a young team as well. Like, a lot of these, like, I had a bit of a bad experience with the Challenge Cup at St Johnstone. I played all the games in the build up, and then the final came around and I didn't get stripped for the final. And that was kind of like, they were treating it as like a reserve, but we were getting through. And then when they got to the final, they were like, right, well, play the guys who have not been playing. So that was a tough experience. That was in 2000. And so that was when St Johnstone won the Challenge Cup 2007. And at Queen of the South, I think it was in my second year at Queen of the South, maybe even actually the final year, we got to the final again, and I picked up a groin injury the week before, and I couldn't play, and I'd been starting every week as a striker for 8-9 games in a row, and I was in really, really good form. And I got a groin injury, and I couldn't play. So that was a real blow, really tough to take. So the chance to go to Falkirk and play in another final, it was really exciting for me. I was looking forward to it. I knew I was in the team. I'd been playing every week as a right midfielder. I knew I was going to be playing. And yeah, there's a lot of young guys who were really looking forward to it. And it was definitely a buzz about the club. Obviously, it wasn't exactly what they wanted, but we were also in the League Cup semi-final as well at that point. So we had a really good, we were in a really good moment, as they say nowadays.
Well, one player that you haven't spoken about that was in that team was Willie Gibson. And he was still known as Willie Gibson at that point. He hadn't become Willie Gibson. Was there any kind of hints at that point that he might change the vowels in his names?
He's a bit of a character, Willie. He was a bit of an interesting signing because he wasn't really a classic Crowsley signing, I don't think. But he actually got man of the match that day. He was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. And he was a really good footballer, Willie, no doubt about it. He fell out with Presley eventually. We went, and I remember he got subbed off at halftime one day. I can't remember who we were losing to. We were at home to Wraith, and we were losing at halftime, and he got subbed off. And after the game, his peg where he sat was just empty. And Presley was raging, absolutely raging with him, and I don't think we ever saw him again after that, actually. Presley was just going around the dressing room, and he's like, "And where the fuck is he?" So that was the last we saw of him. But Willie, a fantastic footballer, so much natural talent, just a little bit of a head case, but I really liked Willie. We travelled together to all the games and really got on with him. Just didn't quite work out with him and Presley. He was a bit too much of a hothead for them, Presley. And unfortunately, it ended the wrong way. But that was after the cup final where he was on play. He was by far the best player on the pitch. And I'm pretty sure he got the man of the match that day.
I saw a lot of him when he played for Dunfermline, and he was so good at getting an early ball into the strikers.
Yeah, he's been absolutely brilliant at football. He's so much natural talent. And just dribbling with the ball, he could just go past the player. He wasn't even quick, particularly, or not rapid, but just drop of the shoulder and he was gone, and he had a really good delivery, as you say.
Well, I remember a midweek game, and John Hughes turned up with Brian Rice and a couple of his backroom staff. I don't know if he was at Hibs at that point, but he was definitely one of the bigger clubs. And you could see him because it wasn't very full stand. And they were definitely watching Willie Gibson. There was lots of teams. I think he ended up moving to Crawley Town just after that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But 20 minutes into the game, he gets sent off. Then Hughes and Rice just stood up and walked out.
Yeah.
You've got to hope somebody had said to him, "Listen, Willie, there's people coming to watch you today." So
not ideal. I know he went down to Crawley and that big fat manager was Steve Evans. The manager, that big, huge, fat guy. Oh, he didn't like him. He had some stories about like Steve Evans. He was not a fan of him.
I think Evans used to wait until two games after signing for you, then he would go through you in the dressing room, like every single player go through them, you're a waste or whatever, and then see if they would respond. But that's like 1970s management. It doesn't work.
Doesn't work anymore.
So what do you remember of your performance in the final?
I think I played the full game. Unless I came off late on, but yeah, I remember playing pretty well. It was a beautiful day, really beautiful day at Livingston. This was grass Livingston before they put in the sand Livingston. So yeah, I just remember playing, doing my usual things at the right wing. I was pretty consistent, nothing flashy. Didn't get much flashiness out for me in the right midfield position. So yeah, just did my job, and I felt like we really deserved the win. I thought we controlled the game, and actually Mark Miller, who played centre mid normally, he was a really good footballer as well. He was suspended maybe for the final. And we played Craig Sibbald and Jay Fulton in centre midfield, 16 and a 17-year-old, which was just unheard of kind of at that time for a 16 or 17 year old to just run the game from midfield. So that was something that stood out. The two of them were just brilliant.
And I mean, it has to be pointed out that they were against Alex Neil in that game. And Alex Neil was the best player in that division, in my opinion, at the time, hands down. He ran every game he played in. So that's a hell of an accolade to say that two teenagers played so well against him.
Yeah, I mean, Sybil is, I mean, still playing now. He's by far the best talent that I've played with in terms of just that age, just the ability to control the ball with no problem, just dribbling, intelligent. I'm actually a bit surprised he didn't go even higher than he did, but I was really lucky to play with those guys like Murray Wallace, who's having a great career at Millwall now. Stuart Murdoch, he went down to Fleetwood for a bit. Jay Fulton's obviously had a really good career at Swansea. Stephen Kingsley, Swansea, Hull, Hearts. I mean, that team was just absolutely packed with guys who went on to have really, really good careers, which says a lot about their talent. And also, just, you know, a bit lucky for Falkirk that they managed to have all those guys at the same time. But I was lucky as well to get picked up and be part of that team when there was so much talent coming through.
Can you remember who the referee was?
It was Craig Thompson, I think. Is that right?
I think it was Brian Winter.
Oh, was it Brian Winter? Do you know what? I remember that I went past, I think Mark McLaughlin was playing centre half for the Hamilton.
Yep.
And I went past him and went away from him, and I would have been almost clean through. And he stuck his leg up and tripped me up. And it was probably one of those really weird ones that kind of looked like he didn't touch me. And it, like, my foot gets stuck on his foot, and I kind of like dragged my foot back and fell. And the ref played on, and I was so angry. I still remember it. Was it Brian Winter?
Here's the thing.
Can you not give me a fucking ball for that?
who does Brian Winter's son play for?
I don't know. Does he play for them? Don't
he? He plays for Hamilton Accies. I think I saw him a couple of weeks ago. So there you go. Do you think Brian Winter's son has ever been booked for dissent? And if he is, would he ever be allowed home?
There must be a conflict of interest. They must not be allowed to referee his son, I'd imagine.
He must get abused in the changing room. Surely having a dad that's a referee, he wouldn't survive that.
I don't think referees are as hated by footballers as fans. Like, I think footballers and referees generally have an okay relationship. The referees are always in the changing rooms and talking to you before the games. And I guess I mentioned Craig Thompson, he was I was quite good with this. I would just talk to them like normally. I don't think I ever get booked for dissent, even though I shouted at them a lot, but I would always be able to like laugh and smile and pretend that I wasn't angry after it, kind of thing. So I think fans hate refs, but I think a lot of players, maybe apart from Willie Colum, a lot of players don't have a problem with refs.
Poor Willie. My friend that I went to school with was actually linesman at that Accies game I was at, Graham McNeely, and he was coming off the pitch just doing his warm-ups. And he hasn't seen me for a while, and I stood up right at the tunnel and gave him a rude gesture. He saw me. I don't think he recognised me. So I think he went in the tunnel thinking, oh no, these fans hate me already. Oh, and I'm just So you win the Challenge Cup. Is that a big celebration for the club? Is it revered? Is it something that fans still would talk to you about today?
I don't know, but I mean, at the time, on the day, it felt really big. You know, it was a cracking day. We got the trophy on the pitch. It was a beautiful sunny day. The whole far side stand was full of Falkirk fans, completely rammed. Obviously, my family was there, my friends were there, and it feels like a big deal on the day. After we went back to the stadium and had a few drinks and some food, and at the time, and even I'm actually not sure if Falkirk have won it since, and I think actually they don't think they've got to the final since, because if I remember rightly, I was watching the TNS game. They played TNS, didn't they, in the semis? And I think they said that they haven't been to the final since they won it in 2012. So yeah, I mean, should be a bigger deal, because it would probably make them feel better about themselves if they actually won a Challenge Cup nowadays.
Well, that wasn't the only cup competition that he had a good run in that season, because the League Cup was kind of played at the same time as the Challenge Cup. Mm. And you were great guns. You defeated Albion Rovers 4-2 in the opening game. Now, this is at Clifton Hill. This is in the middle of pre-season. It's not easy to go to Copenhagen.
I joined just after that. I think, if I'm right, Big Farid scored that day, and it was like it was a culture shock for them, definitely.
And then the next game, a kind of derby against Stenismuir, defeated Stenismuir 3-1. And it set up an incredibly easy tie against Rangers.
Yeah.
When that draw gets made, you kind of go, oh, we get to play Rangers, but we're out the cup.
Yeah, pre-administration Rangers, I think, if I'm not wrong, 2012?
Yeah,
2011?
Yeah. Are we allowed to say administration Rangers? Or are we going to get cancelled?
Right. Rangers FC Limited. but no, I mean, Jelovic, Stephen Naismith, Carlos Bocanegra. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know how Rangers got Jelovic. He was such a talented player.
Yeah. So much. They had so many good players. I'm trying to think who else played that day. I mean, Greg Wilde played. He was their young talent at that point. Ian Black, I think. No, that would have been later. That was the second time we played them.
It was a heck of a game because it ended up being two kind of some late goals, two going on 90 minutes, going into injury time and 94th minute.
So, I mean, Farid scored the first goal and the second goal, Farid scored two, actually. Both crosses, one from Kieran Duffy, one from Craig Sibbald. Kieran Duffy, I've not listened to him, I feel bad. He was my right back. I was the right mid, and I just love playing with him. It's such a shame what happened to him. I think he had a back issue, and he just never managed to kick on. We just had a great relationship. He would ball him on, and I would just sit in and cover for him, and I would always help him in 2v1, and we just love playing with him. So he went flying up the right-hand side and set one up for Farid, and then second goal. And then I think it must have been about 75 minutes. Yeah, I went off, subbed off, 2-0 up, no problem. I sat on the bench and I sat beside Dale Fulton, and I remember saying to him, I was like, can't see them scoring. He's like, oh, shut up. Obviously, 5 minutes later, 2 each. And I was just sat there like, oh, no, this is awesome. Obviously, this is exactly what you expect from Rangers, to come back. But then we got a free kick right at the end, and Mark Miller stepped up, and he'll tell you it was an unbelievable free kick right in the top corner that was unsavable. But Neil Alexander did not cover himself in glory in the goal. And yeah, that was just, that what an incredible night that was, just beating Rangers. Proper Rangers before they had to sign players like Kevin Kyle and stuff. It was the proper, really strong Rangers. That was a really, really good result. Really nice night.
And then you handed Dundee United in the...
Yeah. Rewarded with an away tie to Tannadice, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably my favourite night in football, that one at Tannadice. What a game it was. I played the show 120, went to extra time penalties. I was up against Barry Douglas, who just really good football as well, to have a great career. Obviously, Barry Douglas with Leeds and left Poznan, and I think he's played in Bulgaria as well, maybe Turkey as well and stuff. But Barry was at Queen's Park as well, but just after me. So it was nice to play against somebody who'd obviously been at Queen's Park as well, and just remember, I think we went 1-0 up. I think Farid scored again. It's a common occurrence. They got us back. I think they got us back quite late on, and then in extra time they scored. And it looked like we were going out. It looked like the dream was gone. And then I think it was about 117, 118 minutes. I think it was Mikey just kicked out his hands, and Farid kind of managed to bunt it on. And Ali Graham, who was, I think, 17 at the time, I think he'd maybe scored before, one or two, but this, he just kind of ran past Gary Kenneth and just slotted it in. And the joy was just incredible. I still remember, like, so I was over kind of on the left hand side of the box, and the fans were up like to my left, our fans, and Ali came and went on the right and scores and chipped, and he went away over to the right. And it's quite a funny video, like the actual official, I think, Falkirk TV video potentially, or maybe it's even an official video, I'm not sure. And like, it's kind of like going about and it doesn't know who to follow, and it just follows me like running on my own towards the Falkirk fans and just diving full life with just, nobody else followed me. Everyone else went away over with Ali Graham, but the video managed to follow me running away over to the fans. But it was quite a nice video, but I was just the sheer joy. I still remember that unbelievable joy of getting, oh my God, we've still got a chance here. It's going to penalties and we've still got a chance.
Not just me, but a lot of people that are listening have never had the experience of winning a game in such a fashion as a footballer, as a fan. And you're obviously a fan of football as well. You've obviously been in the same situation. Is it a different feeling winning a game as a player than a fan, or are they very similar?
I think it's much, obviously, you go through much more nervous moments as a fan. I mean, I don't have a club, so most of my fan experience, or pretty much all of my fan experience, is born through Scotland. So I used to go to Hampden a lot and watch Scotland. And yeah. That was tough. I think it's much more difficult as a fan because you're just not in control. You're just watching it. But the joy is quite similar, I think. But the joy for a player maybe lasts a bit longer because you're in the change room after and you're reliving it and sharing it with each other. Like, I don't know. But maybe as a fan, like, I think it's probably just because I don't have I don't really follow a club, so I don't have that same connection with a club. Like, obviously I follow my country and I want Scotland to win, but the joys haven't been so high of the
well, that's a good use of the word high, because it must take you a lot longer to get to sleep, especially after a three in midweek. You must be replaying everything and the adrenaline's still going.
Absolutely. It's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. Like, you just can't. You can't sleep. You'd as well stay up. Yeah, just lying in bed thinking about everything that happened during the game. Or I'm very much like that, but like, I beat myself up about things, and I would like lie in bed and just like, oh, if I'd just taken that touch and then taken him on there, it would have been away, and just thinking about everything that happened during the whole game. Yeah, and then obviously like that night they went to penalty shootout and just like reliving the penalties as well. Like, I hit one myself, I hit the third penalty. We didn't miss any. We scored 5 out of 5. And Willow Flood missed. I was actually quite lucky. So Willow Flood went third for Dundee United just before me and missed. And I feel like that just, all the pressure is gone. It's like, oh, if I miss, it's fine. We're still level. So that, I was quite lucky in that sense. But you just go through everything that's happened the whole night in the penalties as well. I know exactly what I did, but I kind of walked backwards, turned around, sprinted up and just put it on the left hand side of the keeper, sent the keeper the wrong way and just jogged back. It was a nice moment. My mum and dad actually never made it to that game, so that was quite fun, because they said they were listening to it on the radio and heard, oh, David Weatherstone stepping up next, and they can just remember being super, super nervous, obviously. You know, I was probably more nervous than me. I don't remember feeling nervous about going up. I just remember after the game thinking, there's no way I'm watching penalties and not being part of it. Like, there's absolutely no way. Like, I've played 120 minutes here. There's no way I'm standing watching 5 of my teammates walk up there and hit penalties. Like, I just remember, like, Lee Bullen came on the pitch and he's like, who wants to hit one? And I was like, I want to hit one straight away. Like, it's no way I'm watching 5 step up. And if we go out, I want to be part of it, kind of thing.
Paul Mason told me in the cup final against Celtic when it went penalties, he said that every time an Aberdeen player went up to take a penalty, Brian Irvine took 10 steps back. So by the time it came with his penalty, he was in the other penalty box and he had the longest run up for any penalty in cup final history. League form kind of dipped a wee bit for the club. After that, there was a kind of run of not very good results. And from March onwards, I think you kind of touched on it. It was fixtures that had started to pile up.
Yeah.
And you kind of fell out of contention for the title at that point. Yeah. Ross County ran away with it. And then the next season, it wasn't great for you because I think you started to pick up some injuries. Is that correct?
Yeah, I picked up. So I actually picked up an injury on the last game of the season that first year at Fir Hill. I went to flick a ball over someone and my hamstring just went. And so that would be start of May, and then pre-season starts in kind of mid-June. And I remember I was in Barcelona with my wife, my then girlfriend, my wife, and I jumped over a wave in the sea, and it was much steeper than I thought, and my whole like heels went away down, and my hamstring just like not tore but just like twinged, like went again. And I remember going back to the first, like I went home and I phoned like the physio, Kenny. I was like, Kenny, you're not going to believe this. And he's like, get yourself in. So yeah, I remember I went in like early, a couple of weeks early, and tried to get myself fit. And the first training session, we were doing a beat test, and then we were doing a classic beat test, and then a speed test, a 40 meter speed test. And I did that, and then I just started, I felt my hamstring go just at the end of the speed test, and I thought, it's not okay. And then it just took so long. It kept on like getting wee problems with it, and it just never got back to what it should have been. Like, it took so long to get back to fitness. It really, really, really struggled. I remember like that speed test, I remember Presley saying, you were still the fastest through the speed test. That's looking good. And I was like, yeah. And I knew at that time, I was like, oh, my hamstring's not feeling very good at the moment. So yeah, it was a really tough, really, really tough second season. There was good times, some really nice times, but I found myself much less in favour that season. I played quite a lot of games. I think, I don't know exactly the exact amount, but I just found myself less in the favour than I had been previously. And there was a lot of young guys coming through and playing games, and the team wasn't quite as good. So I felt like we just lost a little edge. We lost quite a few players, and yeah, I felt like the second season just wasn't quite as good personally for me as the first had been.
You know, there's a list of kind of ridiculous footballers' injuries. So Dave Besant got injured by a salad cream bottle. Rio Ferdinand got injured by slipping on a McDonald's wrapper. We're going to have to add David Weverston for jumping over a wave.
Yeah, I really struggled after that as well.
Well, your kind of career had started to, I don't want to say wind down at that point, but you eventually had to move on from Falkirk, and you had to drop down to Stirling, who were the fourth tier at that point. Were they still full time, or were they part time at that point?
Part time, No, I mean, the Falkirk Presley left, and Gary Holt came in, and he didn't. I mean, I thought he liked me. I was at the end of the season, I actually started playing really well, and I got my fitness back, and I actually thought I was maybe going to get offered a contract, but I wasn't offered one, and then it was just a case of at that point, it was really difficult. Scottish football is really difficult to stay pro if you're not. Really, really good. To keep on continue being a professional in the second tier is difficult. Like, there's so many players coming through, there's so many young players, there's so many older players in the Premiership that are dropping down. So it's just like, and there's not, in the squads we're getting much smaller, like maybe like 15, 16 players plus youth players. Like, that was kind of the way the squads were going, just with the financial aspect, and just to try and get another club was really difficult. It was just a case of deciding what I wanted to do in terms of part-time, which club I wanted to go to, and then I had a few options, but just speaking to McDonald, who was a manager, and Mark McCullough, she was assistant, I felt like it was probably a good thing for me. Like, I was a bit worried about moving down two divisions, but at the same time, they made it quite clear that they were going to play me as a striker. And they saw me as a striker. They really wanted me, and that obviously was important. And I felt like there was a few guys there who I knew well. Mark Ferry, who'd been at Queen's Park with me, Big Jordan White, who'd been at St. Falkirk with me, Graham Weir, who I just knew from playing against the Pippink, and just guys who I'd known for many years just from playing against them and stuff. So I think it was a really good team, and it was just a really, it was a decision. It took some time to make the decision, but I think it was, it turned out to be the right one anyway, that's for sure.
Had you started to look at a career out with the football at that point then? Because you're saying you were married at that point, and it's always in the back of a footballer's mind, what do I do once I finish playing?
Not really. Not really. Like I was only 27. Yeah. Obviously I was thinking about getting a job and stuff, but I think that first year at Stirling Albion actually didn't. Like I'd had enough money saved up from playing football. I wasn't particularly rich, but I had enough that I could play part time and get paid the part time wage, which was okay at Stirling Albion, that I could just concentrate on that for a year anyway, before I thought about what I was going to do next, kind of thing.
It was a successful season for Stirling Albion. Mm. You made it into the playoffs. This is the first time that you effectively went into them. And East Fife were the victims. And was that kind of like a cup final win? Is it the same kind of feeling?
Amazing. That was just amazing. I mean, it was a bit bittersweet for me, because I got a really bad injury that day on the final day of the season. In East Fife, when we got promoted in the player final, I got a really bad injury in my calf that effectively ruined, or basically stopped, my career. So it was a bit bittersweet, but I especially, from January or February till the end of the season, I played as well as I played pretty much anywhere. I played striker, I played with Jordan White, me and him together were just, I felt like we were a level above that league. We scored a lot of goals together, and that last day at East Fife, got my injury. I actually got injured about 75 minutes or something, and then Sandy Cunningham came on, local Stirling boy, and he scored the winner right at the end, which was, it was incredible. Really, really enjoyable. Real enjoyable night. And obviously winning promotion is, it was huge. And a lot of the fans didn't like me at Stirling Albion for the first 6 months, because I probably, in fairness, I wasn't anywhere near what they probably expected or what they remembered from me previously. I think that second 6 months I kind of won them round, and by the time the season was up, I'd had a really, really great time there, and the promotion just was made it all worthwhile.
And then you immediately unravelled all of that goodwill by joining deadly rivals Aloe Athletic. How could you?
It was impossible to say no. That Aloe in the Championship. And it was the championship of championships. It was Rangers, Hibs, Hearts. And it was like, I said to Greg, I was like, look, I can't say no. Like, how can I give up the opportunity to go and play in the championship with all these teams? And I'd spoken to Barry Smith, who was a manager. He was really keen to get me. It wasn't easy. It was really difficult to leave Stirling. I'd had a nice, really good 6 months there, the second 6 months, and really enjoyed the team, and I felt like we could do well in division in League One. But yeah, I just couldn't turn down opportunities to play in the championship. Unfortunately, I didn't really get to play in the championship because that calf injury just absolutely destroyed me. And it was an absolutely awful year, worse than my life probably. But yeah, that was the thinking behind that. Unfortunately, it didn't work out.
It wasn't the kind of best playing surface to join with kind of niggling injuries affecting you.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even the issue. Just like my calf had completely ripped, and it took me months to get back training. And then every time I got back training, I just broke down. And then when I did get back, I played, I think, 4 games, and in the fourth game, my first start for Aloha, I tore my hamstring. So it was that was it. That was, yeah, I remember I was absolutely gutted. And I mean, I was like in the changing room crying, just couldn't believe my luck. Or, yeah, I'd worked really, really hard to get back fit. I remember my dad saying after, he was like, oh, it's such a shame for you, son. Like, you looked as sharp as I've seen you for many years, kind of thing. And yeah, it's just, yeah, just really tough to take.
Well, you had a brief kind of cup of coffee, as they say, in Brecon City. And then the lure of playing abroad was too much. So talk us through how you made the sensational move to the sunny Scandinavian climes.
I mean, the Brecon, Dodds, he was the manager, Big Dan Dodds was the manager. So he gave me my last chance, kind of. It was a really tough year. I mean, my wife is from Norway, so it was as simple as that. It was a case of trying something new, go and try start a new life in Norway, and yeah, we just went together, and football was just an afterthought at that point. I just played because I wanted to play, and had a good couple of years in the fourth tier with the local team, and enjoyed it, and it was just a really big commitment. It was a huge commitment. Part-time football over here, they train four nights a week and play on the weekends. It's a completely different commitment to part-time football in Scotland, and I couldn't do it alongside working. It was just a case of I can't do it. I'll keep training every now and again, but I can't commit to the games. And then I got a job at the airport over here, and that works every third weekend. So it was, the chance to play now is pretty much nil. And then, that's pretty much it.
Was it Verdal that you ended up moving to? Yeah.
I live in the town just beside that, but I live on here. But Verdal was the team that I played for, yeah.
They're not the kind of biggest names in European football, but I mean, the town is known for the Battle of Stiklestad, which took place in 1030. That's quite famous.
Absolutely.
King Olaf Haraldsson, he died at that battle, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, we had a good team. We got to play, who did we play in the cup? We played Ranheim, I think, in the cup, who's just like a second tier team. They actually played Rosenborg in the cup last year, which was quite nice for them. I think we finished, maybe we pushed for promotion to the third tier, but we just missed out. And after that, the club kind of ran out of money, and I kind of lost interest a little bit with all the training. And that was the end of that, pretty much.
So what's your experiences then as a Scotsman of North Norway? Are winters really bad?
No, and just different, like much nicer in a way. Like it's colder, but it's nicer. It's not so much rain in the winter, not so much wind and rain. It's more of like colder and nicer. It's tough at times. Like when it gets cold, it gets down to -15 or -16. And I remember I still remember the shock of training in -15. That was a real shock. I remember I had on, those wee black gloves that everyone wears, wee magic gloves. I had on a pair of them, and they were not sufficient for being outside in the -15 play football. That's what I say.
One of my greatest achievements in football was when Livingston had brought in a French midfielder from the south of France. He was from Nice. And I convinced him after a game. I would speak to him and I said, listen, in Scotland, you can't wear gloves in the winter. He said, can't wear gloves in the winter. He didn't wear them. He saw me a few games later and he said, no gloves. That's my greatest achievement, convincing a foreigner not to wear gloves in Scottish football. So what does Norway think about our football? Because we obviously have kind of different opinions about Norway, we kind of view it. What does Norway think about us and our football?
I don't think it has a strong opinion about Scottish football, just because there's such an interest in English football over here that it just takes all the eyes away. Obviously, Rangers and Celtic exist as a thing, and everybody knows who they are. But don't think there's a huge the way we used to think about Scandinavian players, they were fit, they were well organized, they could run all day. I don't think there's a kind of general opinion about Scottish players the same way over here that we would have about them before. So yeah, obviously we beat them last year, which was fantastic. And I think that did not go down well, because I think, Scottish football, it's not super highly rated, is it? Across Europe, I think a lot of people think that it's quite weak, technically and stuff. But yeah, I don't think Norwegians in general have a hugely strong opinion about it.
Is there quite a lot of buzz there because of Haaland now?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been buzz about the English Premiership, just because, there's always been Norwegians going there, and it's quite sad, really. I'm a huge fan of the Norwegian football. I love watching it. I write about it, talk about it, and I think it's fantastic. But a lot of the people here, a lot of Norwegians just have no interest in it. They'll just watch Liverpool or Man United, and I think it's quite sad.
I think that's one of the shames in football. I've had the benefit of watching Scottish football at all levels, and some of the best games I've seen have been third tier, fourth tier. It's not just because it's not just the biggest clubs that play the best football. You can be entertained.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to have to ask you, have you tried Smalahove or Rackfisk?
Absolutely not.
For anyone who's wondering, that's sheep's head or fermented fish.
No, not going anywhere near that.
Okay, we'll start wrapping up then with a fast fire round. David, give me your best opponent you've played against.
Oh, best opponent I've played against. Could have been Lee Wallace.
Okay. Best teammate you've played with?
Probably Stephen Dolby.
Okay. Best goal scored?
By me?
Yes.
You're
trying to be humble. You're a striker. You've got them written all down in a list at home.
I scored a really good volley for Queen's Park against Elgin once. Do you know what? My first ever goal was one of my best, against East Stirling at Furze Park for Queen's Park in a Challenge Cup game. Came over my shoulder and I volleyed it in on the side foot into the top corner. Probably didn't get better than that. Just a lot of tap-ins and one-on-ones after that.
All right. Best stadium played at?
Hampden.
Okay, that's an easy one. Best prank witnessed in the game?
Don't know. You know what we used to... We used to play Queen of the South, right? There's a guy called Martin Lancaster that used to play with us. I don't know if you remember him. Don't even know where he was from, but he came from a college in America. He'd been playing a football over there. And he went in, we went a night out once. And he brought a camera. And I don't know why he would do that, but he brought a camera. And he left it. And Neil Scally, a real character, he took it home, because he lived beside Martin. And he was just looking through the photos, just as he do. And he found all these photos of Martin, wearing nothing but an apron, doing press ups, doing the lawnmowing and stuff, really, really bizarre. And we went to training a few days later, and then Scally had printed out, it was at Glasgow Green, so sports area, I guess, I don't know what you call it, sports pavilion. He printed out about 100 pictures of Martin and pasted them all over the whole sports centre. And he's re-apron and nothing else. That was pretty funny.
Best insult you've heard on a pitch?
God. Oh, I don't know. I couldn't even imagine. Couldn't even think, honestly.
All right. And the best crowd chant you've ever heard?
What did they used to sing? Don't even know. I didn't listen to the crowds when I was playing.
If I was a fan of one of your clubs, I would have tried to segue into you into the Witch number one hit, Don't Blame It on the Weather Man. I would try and swap Weatherston in there somehow.
They used to sing, you know, remember Gabriel Bolnauer?
Mm-hmm.
They used to sing like Gabby Bolnauer, he's fast as fuck. And then they used to change that to Baby Weatherston. Quite like that.
Okay. That's good. All right, well, that brings us to the end of another episode. Very big tack skal doha to David for forwarding the fjords to us. Was that good presentation?
That was not bad.
Join us next week for another forensic journey into the annals of Scottish football. Our website is csi.com and you can find all our social over there. So until next week, cheery bye and thank you very much, David.
Thanks very much.